William Powell versus Eugene Fujimoto. Mr. Lasker.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm David Lasker, here representing the plaintiff appellant William Powell. The question before the Court is whether the complaint was sufficient to state a claim upon which relief can be granted under Section 1983. You know, there is really no worse stigma in American life and culture than to be dubbed a sexual predator. And the complaint makes the case that the defendants have falsely accused Dr. Powell of being just that, and that they've done so in a vicious campaign designed to use lies and deception to ruin his career. They certainly have thoroughly impugned the honesty and integrity of Dr. Powell, and that in and of itself is stigma plus for purposes of a liberty claim.
Mr. Lasker, all of your damages seem speculative. In other words, future effects on Dr. Powell's?
Yes.
Dr. Powell's,
yes.
Earnings capacity. Has there been any concrete injury that has already occurred? I mean, I understand, you know, the premise of your argument, but
well,
you know what I mean by concrete.
I do, Your Honor. The most significant actual loss was the attorney's fees that he had to pay for proceedings for over a period of a year and a half.
Now, that's really the question here. So, on what authority are you claiming a property interest in the attorney's fees that are paid to defend the charges? Because it seems completely counter to the rule that parties pay their own attorney's fees unless there is a statute shifting them.
Yes, Your Honor. But the fact of the matter is, I'm basing this just on the reality of the fact that over a year and a half to defend himself against these scurrilous charges successfully in the end, he had to pay money. He had to suffer the aggravation of this.
Of course, but what's different about this case and every other case in the history of American jurisprudence?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important, very important, for me to note also that during that year and a half period, he did lose income. He did lose opportunities for merit pay. He did lose opportunities for summer school teaching. He lost the possibility of paid speaking opportunities and publishing opportunities, which were real losses during that period of time as well.
Is all of that in this record?
Well, it's alleged in this record that he has lost.
Is it in there? Is there proof in the record?
Well, Your Honor, this is just a motion to dismiss, and so the record is indeed very slim. But it's there in paragraph 20 of the complaint that he lost earnings. And to that extent, it is explicitly in the complaint, yes.
There are a number of state claims, defamation and various other things that,
yes,
that obviously aren't normally tried in federal court unless it's appended to something else, and this is where you get that, I guess, the liberty interest or due process or property interest or whatever in order to get into federal court. There is these other things seem to be more to the point.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't the law quite clear that you have no property interest in attorney fees?
Yes, I concede that point. I think that that the experience that this man had, having to pay out money, having to worry about losing money, having to worry about defending himself against scurrilous charges, does rise to a constitutional tort. But the significant thing in answer to your question, Judge Mannion, is that this is not a mere attack on his competency. This is an absolute assault on his honesty and integrity as a human being. And, you know, there
well,
are
that,
just...
Yeah, that's... I understand that. That is a lot of state claims there. I guess what we're it seems to me your weakest part of this is maybe the federal part of it.
Well, the case of Sonleiter versus York in 2002 from this court, Head versus Chicago's School Reform Board in 2000 from this court, and Swick versus City of Chicago in 1993. Munson
what
versus
do those
Frisk,
cases hold?
They hold
from your interpretation.
They hold that that if there is something more than the ordinary, something that is beyond
that's very broad, something more than the ordinary.
Well, they each one shows in one way or another that in those cases they were petty kinds of everyday things that we have to suffer. We have to expect to suffer as we live life. This is something different than that. This is an extraordinary attack on his character, which meets the rule of those cases, that it has to be something more than a mere attack on a person's competence. It has to be something that thoroughly impugns his honesty and integrity. And
so would we open up a Pandora's box to every sexual harassment defendant who
no
paid attorney's fees?
No, but I understand your concern about that. And the reason I say no is that this is a situation where we have people acting under color of state law in a conspiracy to harm somebody. This is a constitutional tort, not the everyday
so
thing.
Every university, every state university, every government institution, sexual harassment?
No, because there can be mistakes. There can be inadvertently wrong charges. These were false charges for a conspiracy to ruin the man. That's different. I just want
well,
to
again,
say
the federal claim is what?
The federal claim is that he has been deprived of a liberty interest because of the stigma plus and
because yeah okay that I just want to focus on that. So it's what he retains his core job and his tenure, et cetera. It's what emanates from that, the you know, travel to make a speech somewhere for
yes.
money, getting published, having awards given to you, and lots of things that are in addition. And that's really, it's that halo that surrounds the job, the core job, that has been injured. And so whatever, however we describe that, that's the, I guess we'll call it the liberty interest.
Yes, it is a liberty interest, and because it's pecuniary in nature, it's also a property interest when you are a tenured professor, as Dr. Powell is. If I may, I'd reserve the remainder
okay.
of my time. Thank you.
Mr. Sweeney?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is John Sweeney. I'm an assistant attorney general for the Wisconsin Department of Justice. I was also counsel for the defendants at the district court level. I believe, as the court has suggested to Mr. Lasker, that if he does have a claim, it is in fact in state court and not in federal court. I think the law is very clear, and we saw nothing at the district court level which would show a demotion, a loss of a job, or some significant suspension. There is no stigma plus. I believe Judge Crabb correctly analyzed the plaintiff's complaint in that regard. Then in terms of a property interest, Judge Crabb said very specifically, as we had argued to her, that the plaintiff makes no claim in his complaint that he had a property interest. Is it a question of language? Should the district court have inferred that that's what he meant? I don't think that's the district court's job, nor are we required, is this court required, to make an inference that that's really what the complaint meant. Had Mr. Lasker pled a property interest without due process, I think the response would have been, well, certainly, as you now are aware, Mr. Powell did in fact have due process. He had a hearing, a complaint, a charge came out of the hearing to the chancellor, who declined to pursue it. He did have due process, and Judge Rovner, as you've suggested, due process sometimes is expensive, but that does not make it a constitutional claim, either under liberty a loss of liberty or a loss of process. Was there a loss of income or whatever? At this stage, it's quite speculative, but the pleadings in and of themselves do not establish a liberty interest nor a property interest. And the district court, I believe, correctly analyzed the complaint, and there was no request to file an amended complaint or anything of that nature. And based on the complaint before the court, we believe Judge Crabb was correct in dismissing that and remanding the state claims to state court. And I would ask this court to affirm.
I have one question. What did you do to establish this not getting things that one normally gets? Would you have to compare it to another tenured professor to show how they occasionally get these perks, I'll call them, and extra income for summer work or travel?
Are you speaking in terms of a liberty interest?
I guess so. I describe it as a halo around the core job, but it's Judge Crabb described it as a stigma plus or something. But is there a way to tangibly evaluate that? Because I mean, just from a gut reaction, I guess that's real. You know, judges sometimes get asked to do things and get awards and do other things. And people like me don't go anywhere. But I just, is there something that's important about this?
The first issue is there the liberty interest in and of itself? And I would suggest that is somewhat standard, as this court has said repeatedly. You have a demotion, a suspension.
You're talking about an adverse action that we've often described.
That's the first step. Yeah. And then I think I'm forced to suggest that it's probably a case-by-case analysis. But you don't have to make that analysis unless you find that first portion, which we don't have in this case. Mm-hmm. And I would like to make your job easier in terms of that second step, but frankly, I don't have a practical suggestion.
Okay. Is that all you have?
If there are no further questions, I will sit.
Okay. Mr. Lasker, you got 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I would like to just say that Munson versus Frisk and Board of Regents versus Roth, which talk about how the liberty interest is implicated when there is an attack on your honesty and integrity and your character, I think is a sufficient legal basis for the finding of a liberty interest here. Now, for Judge Crabb to have dismissed the complaint, she had to ignore paragraph 26, which says that the actions have deprived the plaintiff of liberty and property without due process of law in violation of the due process clause and so forth. That is certainly, in the context of the complaint as a whole, alleging a property interest that has been a protected property interest that has been deprived. And in paragraph 20 of the complaint, it clearly says that he has lost earnings and earning capacity, which clearly are forms of property for a tenured professor.
Now, of course, in the context of tenured employment, the Supreme Court has strongly implied that nothing less than termination alters protected right. You know, that's Siegert versus Gully.
Well, I believe that they are talking there about that kind of an economic impact, the kind that would come with termination. And I think that Dr. Powell should be given the opportunity to prove that this has been the virtual equivalent of a constructive discharge. He's persona non grata in that department and in the university, and we're seeking to put those facts before the court. As the court said in the Hoskins case, complaints just launched the case, and the fact is we have notice pleading
Is this a retaliation claim, persona non grata, because of his taking this on like this? Is that whatever?
I think,
as opposed to being persona non grata because he was accused of sexual harassment.
Well, I think that there is a potential retaliation claim in the facts of this case, and there may need to be an amended complaint, but I don't allege that in this complaint, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Much.
This case will be taken under advisement.